Hello, it's Friday, October 6th, and you're listening to Wing Radio. I'm Lisa Giuliani.
And I'm Victor Thorne. Welcome to Wing TV. It's great to be back. Lisa, another road trip.
Yes.
Another road trip. It's been a very, very productive year.
Very long day yesterday.
Yeah, a lot of miles. And what we did was to commemorate the World Can't Wait anti-war rallies that took place or were scheduled in 220 cities across America. What we did was, instead of going to just one anti-war rally, we actually went to two of them yesterday. The first was in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and the second then was in our hometown of State College, PA. So what we want to do is go over what happened at these two events and show not only the positives, but also some of the things that were limited, lacking, that could have been better. And what we did is we hit the road about 6:30 in the morning yesterday. And anybody that's never been to central Pennsylvania, especially in the fall time, you should come here sometime because the trip down there was absolutely beautiful.
The trees are all turning and the colors are beautiful, and it's just a shame fall is such a short season in the year.
Yeah, and for those who haven't been here, in central Pennsylvania, the mountains at the highest are probably around 2,500 feet, but most of them are these slow rolling hills that are maybe 1,500 feet high, a lot of valleys, and
a lot of woods.
Right, and a lot of woods, and the scenery is gorgeous. So driving down there yesterday morning, you know, we got there right when, or started off when daybreak was coming out, and what a beautiful, it's the fall foliage isn't in full bloom yet, but it's getting there.
The colors are vivid and vibrant and bursting, and the trip alone was worth it just to be able to see that beautiful landscape.
Exactly, and there's so many people that I meet that aren't from this area that comment on how beautiful it is, and I know Michael Langston, when he visits us, comments all the time on how beautiful it is here. So if you've never been to this part of the country, do yourself a favor and drive through sometime. It's just a wonderful place here.
Psychos need not apply.
Now also, somewhere along the line we stopped and had breakfast, and to a lot of people they're like, big deal, what's the big deal about breakfast? Well, being that I get up at 3:30 every morning, I get to eat breakfast, a real breakfast, probably about four or five times a year. The only time, really, is when we go on road trips.
Breakfast for Victor is like Christmas to a lot of other people.
Yeah, and so whenever we go on these trips, we always stop somewhere, relax, have a good breakfast, some pancakes and bacon and eggs, whatever. And it always breaks up the trip, fills us up, gets us some fuel for the rest of the day. And
clogs every artery in the body.
Exactly, and we had a long, long day in front of us. Now, we got into Pittsburgh. This event was starting in Pittsburgh at 11 o'clock a.m. That's when it was scheduled.
And it was supposed to be held at the Point State Park in Pittsburgh.
So we rolled into the city at about 20 till 11 and ducked into a quick Hilton hotel, got ourselves all ready. And when we walked into this park, right off the bat we knew this wasn't what we had expected, because on the internet they said they wanted everybody to wear red shirts. Well, we didn't wear red shirts because we learned long ago that whenever organizers of an event want everybody to wear the same colored shirt, it's for one reason, so that they all can be identified.
Right.
And we've seen that at too many events.
Well, beyond the red shirts, it was announced as a day of mass resistance. Resistance, but I suppose you have to be present in order to resist.
Yeah.
So and there weren't really any people there when we got there.
So we walked into Point State Park, which is right in full view of the Pittsburgh Pirates baseball stadium and also their football stadium, the Carnegie Science Museum that we've been to. They had this big big theater where they have that, what's that called, Lisa? They play the movies on the roof, on the ceiling. I can't remember what it's called.
Planetarium?
It's like a planetarium, but for movies. Anyway, we got there, and everyone was supposed to wear red shirts to signify the bloodshed in Iraq. Well, when we got there,
there was one person wearing red.
Yeah, and there was at most
older lady.
A dozen people there when we got there. And
in the whole park.
Yeah,
really.
In the whole park. So, now, we've been to other events, one this spring in New York City, through the streets of Manhattan where there were 350,000 people. We went to one last fall in D.C., which surrounded the White House, which had 300,000 people there. And the feeling of invigoration that you get from this many people being active and out there for a purpose really re-energizes you and makes it seem like everything we're doing has a reason and a purpose. But when you walk into a park and there's a dozen people...
And we walked in there at 5 minutes till 11. Some other people finally did start straggling into the park for the supposed protest that was going to take place, and that was at about 11:30.
Right. So it was. I commented to Lisa afterward. I said, "Isn't it ironic that the name of this event for all 200 cities across America was 'The World Can't Wait'? But I guess
the protest can.
The protest can, because it's so typical of the left and the way they organize these events, or should I say, don't organize these events? Because first off, the organizer didn't even show up,
yeah.
Blew off the event. Everybody was late. There was no plan, no organization.
Well, everybody who did show up, and we think about 3 dozen people ultimately
yeah.
showed up. Nobody was allowed to have a sign in the park.
Which was all right.
Right. We had our banner, but it was rolled up. So the organizer themselves didn't show up, and nobody really knew what to do. Everybody was looking around and waiting and having small talk with one another.
So finally, about 20 after 11, I go up to this other group, and I said, "Don't you think we should do something? Don't you think we should get out there and get out into the city where people can actually see us?" And I said, "We have this big banner. We'll unroll this, and let's do something." Well, the one guy says... And it was the same guy that we saw out at Kent State mm-hmm. earlier this year when we went out to that event.
Yeah, that was strange.
Yeah, and he said, "You know, I don't really want to be too pushy about this. Why don't you go and talk to them?" Now I'm thinking...
Wait a second.
Yeah.
He said what?
He says, "I don't want to be pushy, so why don't you go do it?"
Pushy now, as far as what? Talking to the other
yeah.
protesters to get them to go
right.
do something?
Exactly. Now think about this. Think about this. We have thousands... And thousands, tens of thousands of our own GIs, our own servicemen being killed in Iraq. We're spending $2 billion a week on this god-awful war. $455 billion plus total on this war in Iraq. Probably 12,000 U.S. troops dead, most of them that they're lying about. Hundreds and thousands of Iraqi citizens dead. And this guy... doesn't want to be pushy.
What was he out there for then?
Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking. What the hell is he out there for? So I went up to these other people and said, "Don't you think we should do something? Let's get out there where people can see us." Well, let's wait for 10 or 15 more minutes. We'll see if more people show up.
Well, people started actually leaving.
Yeah.
Because everybody was just standing around doing nothing and nothing was happening.
Yeah.
There was a police presence there. Obviously, the police... had gotten previous word that some event was going to take place there. So we had police on bicycles, on motorcycles, and in cars driving around. And they must have been laughing because
yeah.
nothing was going on.
Yeah. So we waited another 10 minutes. And finally we're like, "Come on, we have to get out there. We have to do something instead of just standing in this park where nobody can see us." So we all went out towards... the city, the streets.
Right, but before we got there, we saw this other group gathered on the far side of the park. So we thought, well, maybe this is more protesters. So we went up to them. Well, they were a little young. It turns out they were with a school field trip,
yeah.
so we couldn't even add them to our group and make it larger so we'd have more numbers.
Right. So we went out onto the streets, and this is right in downtown Pittsburgh. This is the heart of the city, right there by the stadiums, all the skyscrapers above us. And when we told people we had a banner... they're like, "Oh, yeah, yeah, we got to get out there and
yeah,
roll this
were,
banner."
They were really excited about the fact that we had brought a banner until we unfurled it.
Yeah, so we have to tell you now the reactions. Everyone that's followed Wing TV has seen our big 14 and 15-foot 9/11 controlled demolition banners. So
we take them everywhere.
Yeah. So we unrolled it, and we stood there right on this at this intersection in downtown Pittsburgh. And there's a couple other people there helping us hold it because it's so big.
Initially,
right. So, one lady comes up, and she's one of the anti-war protesters, and she's behind the sign, so she can't see what it says. She comes up and sees the front of it, and she's like, "Oh, my God! Oh, my God! Oh, my God!" And she walks back to the group. And I'm thinking, her reaction was like, if we would have had a sign that said, George Bush is the greatest, or war is good, or something like that. What it says is, 9/11 World Trade Center controlled demolition. Because, as we've said for 5 years now, right. The basis for this war all rests upon the lies of 9/11.
Right. But so, see, the anti-war left crowd only wants to focus on getting the troops out of Iraq. They don't want to focus on the causation of the war. They don't want to at all look at the link between the events of 9/11 and what got us into Iraq in the first place and Afghanistan. They just want the troops to come home.
Yeah. So, after the first lady saw the sign, she must have sent another one over. And she walks around to the front of the sign and she reads it and she says, that sign's about 9/11. Now, this is exactly what she said. That sign's about 9/11. What does that have to do with the war in Iraq? And I'm like, what does it have to do with the war in Iraq?
Right.
Isn't it obvious? And then she says,
no, it's not.
And then she says, that sign doesn't even make any sense. And she walks around then in a puff. And
in a huff.
In a huff. And she, I mean, what does 9/11 have to do with the war in Iraq? And this is, I believe, indicative of the anti-war crowd.
Well, but they're not all like that, because a lot of them do know that 9/11 has everything to do with the mm-hmm. war in Iraq and Afghanistan and the one on our doorstep. And some of the lefty people that were there did help right. us hold up the banner, and they thought it was a good banner. It's just what ended up happening was after a few minutes, they went off with the rest of the crowd, about 33 other people. There were three dozen there all together. They decided they didn't want to be near our banner.
Yeah.
So they went to the opposite street corner, 33 of them, and three of us
there
were
left. There weren't even that many. There were maybe two dozen at that point.
Well, three of us were left to hold the banner up on the busy yeah. street corner, and the rest of them went across the street to get away from us and our banner and started banging on a little drum and singing some chant.
Yeah, and we have to give a thank you to a guy named Harry.
Yep.
Harry and this other guy in a suit whose name I didn't get. They were the only ones that stood there and held the sign up. Now, it's good that these anti-war people came out. It's says something for them. But they went over then on the other side of the street corner, and they had little yellow signs that were the size...
Little yellow pieces of paper.
Yeah, that were the size of what you would put in your printer. You know, a sheet of typing paper. That's how big their signs were. Little 8.5 by 11 yellow signs that they wrote little things in magic marker on. So even from across the street,
right.
from across the intersection, we couldn't even read what
no.
it said on their signs. But they're holding them, like, up against their chest. And they're singing these very, very timid songs, okay? So,
well, it was all really passive.
Yeah.
Now, our banner is very effective. It draws a lot of attention from passersby and from moving traffic. It provokes thought and discussion. It gets people to come up to us and ask questions. And it's very good for planting seeds. What they were doing, people were walking by them and not giving them a second glance.
Yeah, they weren't even looking at
them. Nobody was going up to them asking them questions. Nobody was exchanging in dialogue with them on the street. I guess that's more effective. That approach is more effective in getting the public to look at what you're saying and to come up to you and talk to you and get them to start thinking about things.
Right. So there are all these buses, all these commuters, and this was right at noon by now. So it's when everyone's going out for lunch, everybody's going out in the afternoon, and there's thousands of people seeing this banner.
Right.
So what we do is we walk down one of these big, long city blocks to another intersection where there's even more traffic.
You're skipping a whole part. Yeah. The crowd that bailed on us and refused to stand with us while we were holding the banner, the three of us, Victor, I, and Harry, they were across the street from us initially. Well, then they decided they didn't even want to be across the street from us. They wanted to be out of sight of us and our banner. So they walked ahead. Well, we followed along behind them to their chagrin, and we ended up on another busy street corner.
Right.
And they started proceeding to bang their little drum again somewhere else.
Yeah. So we stood on this corner where it's even busier, and there's all these buses and taxis
uh-huh.
and everybody going by. There are people honking, some people giving thumbs up. Then there are other people, though, that came up
Well, there was one person. Yeah.
Well, there were a couple
person
people.
Was pretty vociferous about yeah. it.
I mean, there were people walking by, though, all the businessmen and business ladies that are saying, like, what's this about? What's uh-huh. the control? And, you know, I would explain it to to them as best I could. But one guy came up then and started really, really lashing out at us about this.
Effing morons, he called us.
And so he was, like, saying how preposterous it was that we had this sign. And so I kept asking him, how much research have you done on the World Trade Center towers?
And he kept saying, the planes brought the towers down. The plane, didn't you see it? And then he wouldn't answer Victor's question.
Yeah, all I wanted was, how much research have you done on this? And he refused to answer. So finally he was in such a huff that as he was walking away, it's like, you people are nothing but effing morons.
Because I asked him directly, how can you argue a position that you haven't researched? How can you argue a point that you haven't researched?
Yeah.
And he refused to answer that because he couldn't answer it. And so that's when we got called the effing moron.
But he used the real word.
Yeah.
So anyway, we hung out in Pittsburgh. And finally realized we had to get back to State College because that event started at 5 o'clock. So we rolled our banner up, hopped back in the car.
And we thanked Harry, of course, for helping us out. He was apparently the only one with the guts enough to stand with the truth. You know what's interesting is the anti-war crowd likes to just contain themselves in a safe zone with that politically correct, safe, you know, way of protesting. Really passive, really flatline, really ineffective. Chant and give peace a chance, like that's going to make changes in the world. It didn't change much of anything in the 60s, and it's not going to change anything now. But Harry stepped out of the safe zone and was willing to stand with us with the controlled demolition banner. That's the dangerous truth,
which the
anti-war crowd refuses to touch.
But see, in the 60s, though, they were more radicalized.
Yeah,
and they were willing to push the envelope much further.
They didn't just rely on songs like Give Peace a Chance to make change or to get their message out. They were willing to be loud. I mean, you go to a protest,
they
that's
were willing
what you're supposed
to be
to
beaten.
Do. Protest. You're supposed to show how angry you are with your protest and how frustrated and how sick of the status quo you are.
Yeah. And, you know, when we were on the streets of Pittsburgh, when someone, like a truck driver, would go by and he'd beep his horn and put the thumbs up.
Right.
We could see in his eyes, here was somebody that knew the truth and was looking at us and saying, damn it, thank you for getting out there and putting the truth on this street
everywhere
corner.
We've appeared with this banner, people have come up to us and thanked us for bringing it out there. And the same thing happened yesterday. People did come up and thanked us for bringing the banner out there. And the cowards that were too afraid to stand with us, with our banner, you know, they just don't have a clue. They're so far behind the eight ball, and they're so wrapped up in their fear that they wouldn't know the truth if it smacked them upside the head.
And they didn't turn a single head. They were just, they became invisible.
Well, they accomplished nothing. Their protest was not a protest.
Yeah. And there was one other guy that he had buttons all over his jacket and his shirt.
Right.
And he described himself as a professional protester. He goes to all these events. And he came up behind us and he says, there's three troublemakers. And I turn around and he has a big smile on his face. And he says, oh, thank you guys for being out here today. And he was definitely more on the liberal side than us, but he was giving us thumbs up and patting us on the back and thanking us for being out there. So even though there weren't a lot of people there involved in this event, we were on the streets of Pittsburgh, and thousands of people got to see 9/11 World Trade Center controlled demolition.
Right, and that's a place where that banner's never been before.
Absolutely.
And, What we experienced with this little group of anti-war protesters is just a representative sampling of how the larger anti-war crowd movement operates and how they behave and how they treat the 9/11 demolition and conspiracy information. They completely ignore it.
Yeah, the crux of everything,
right.
9/11. And when that lady says, what does 9/11 have to do with the war in Iraq? It was like I should have just picked my jaw up from the sidewalk after it fell off my face because finally someone said it in plain English where they're coming from. They completely ignore and minimize
9/11. And it isn't that they don't know, because their leadership has the information on the controlled demolition. Cindy Sheehan has a copy of the Steve Jones report. She said she's not going to address this at all. Her son died in this war based on the lies of 9/11, and she refuses to touch the issue whatsoever.
Here's the woman with the biggest anti-war voice of anybody, anybody, and she refuses to touch it. And you know why? Because the majority of the anti-war movement, those at the top, are very much controlled opposition.
Absolutely.
They're not authentic, real opposition that wants to do anything in their power to stop this war. This is as controlled as anything I've ever seen.
What they want to result from this is Bush and Cheney out of the White House and a Democrat in there instead.
And so, which leads us to our second event.
Right.
That was in State College, Pennsylvania, our hometown. It was in front of the gates at Penn State University, a place we've protested many times before.
Right. Busiest intersection downtown, right?
Right, the heart of downtown. And when we pulled up at 5 minutes to 5, there was a dozen people there at most. Again, a very small turnout. We knew some of the people there. One of the guys runs a bookstore downtown.
Well, there ended up being about 20 people there by the time we left.
Yeah. So anyway, we parked our car, came back, and even though there was a small turnout, we had some signs that you can see on the Wing TV homepage. And 5 or 10 minutes after the event started, here comes the local Channel 6 news affiliate. And she comes up, she sets her camera up, and she's interviewing various people. And then she heard me and Lisa talking to others. She came down and set the camera up right in front of us. At first, she interviewed Lisa.
Right. So she asked me some questions, and I made my comments, and I tied it all back to 9/11, that the war is predicated upon the lies of 9/11. 9/11 was used as a pretext to rally the country behind the war, among other reasons. And she asked several other questions about the Mark Foley situation, and I said, well, I think the timing of that is very interesting, right before the upcoming elections. And she had some other things. I can't exactly remember at the moment.
She did a good job. She did a good job asking the questions. And then she set the camera up in front of me, and she was asking basically the same questions about Mark Foley and what do we want to accomplish and what do we want to happen to the Bush administration. I said, in all honesty, I don't want Republicans or Democrats in this office. I said, I wish we could clean out the whole damn city of Washington, D.C., and replace them with people that have our best interests first instead of their own agenda, which only promotes and increases their power.
We also stress that the country has been misled, the world has been misled and deceived, not only by the Bush administration, but on government officials on both sides of the aisle for a very long time.
Right.
And the only way we're going to make any positive changes is if, you know, the media reports the truth, which is a total joke, because they're not going to report the truth.
But see, this woman did, because when she asked me about Mark Foley, I reiterated what Lisa said. She said, well, this is only the tip of the iceberg. And I said, I concur with that, because this isn't the first time this has happened. I said, you go back to the Franklin cover-up, and you go back to the Page scandal that was on the cover of the Washington Times. And I said, this has been going on for years and years. And I said, this is a filthy city in Washington, D.C. that the entire place needs cleaned out.
Yeah, but she didn't report. They didn't air all of our comments.
Well,
they aired,
of course not,
some of our comments. And so she only actually broadcast some of the truth.
Well,
so
I mean, they didn't have the time to.
This is not the rule, Victor. This is the exception to the rule, because they generally don't even do that.
But see, that's the point I'm trying to make, is that even though there were only a couple dozen people out there, the media covered this event. They put the camera in front of Lisa and myself, and we were dropping some bombs.
When
you're talking about the Franklin cover-up to an NBC affiliate, this is stuff that doesn't make it onto the air. And what happened, to this woman's credit, this newscaster, is she could have very easily said, oh, these two people are way too radical for TV, and completely cut us out of the segment. Well, I had to go to bed, but Lisa watched the 11 o'clock news last night, and who was on TV?
Victor and I were both on there with the signs that we made. Mine, I think, said...
says right here,
bogus war based on lies of 9/11.
And mine said 9/11 lies equal endless war. This is right on television now for everybody in central Pennsylvania to see.
Right, we did have our banner at the State College protest, but there wasn't any space for us to unfurl it. And who knows how many people would have bailed on that protest if we would have unfurled it, because the minute I asked a question, who would Jesus bomb, three or four of them split immediately after I finished speaking. So
yeah. They just wanted to play a little boombox, yeah, very lowly with, you know, give peace a chance
and so forth. They tried to get into a couple of chants, and then they felt stupid chanting, so they shut up and they didn't chant. And basically, they weren't yelling out anything. They weren't protesting. They stood along the fence holding their signs up so people could see them, which is a good thing.
Yeah.
But I was the only one protesting.
Well, and at one point, this woman had a bullhorn, okay? And she gave it to Lisa.
No, she asked if anybody would like to speak into the bullhorn. And, of course, nobody wanted to. So I volunteered. Now, I've never done that before.
Now, I first have to ask you a question, Lisa. Did God command you to bullhorn downtown State College?
No, God had nothing to do with it.
Why does God only speak and command Alex Jones to bullhorn the Bilderberg?
Well, I've been asking for a long time why God isn't answering my prayers, but apparently Alex Jones has God's ear, and I don't.
Well, I got an email from someone the other day that said, you know, God really does work in mysterious ways, because according to George Bush, God commanded him to invade Iraq,
right,
and according to Alex Jones, God commanded him to bullhorn the Bilderbergs. And he said, either God's really screwed up in the head, or these two people are insane.
Yeah.
And you can see the similarities, this delusional sense of George Bush and Alex Jones, these delusions of grandeur, these feelings of self-importance. And so let's make it clear, God didn't command you to bullhorn downtown State College.
No, God had nothing to do with it whatsoever. You know, these protests are not tea parties. They're not little coffee clutches. They're not little social events. They're not supposed to be anyway. You're supposed to speak up at a protest. A silent protest is no protest. That's what they want. They want silence. They want no dissenting voices. And I speak up at every single protest. I don't need a bullhorn to be heard. I am always heard. And I always encourage other people to speak up. And a couple of the other people did try to yell out a couple things, kind of faintly, you know, so that, well, not too many people can hear you. But I always let it ring out, you know, because it's not exactly scream therapy, but hey, it works.
Yeah.
And it does get people's attention, and it gives other people a little bit of confidence that they can speak up at these things.
Yeah.
You know, don't treat it like it's a tea party. It's a protest.
Yeah. Now, in the end, we put on 300-plus miles yesterday.
Yeah.
And it was basically, we went from 6:30 in the morning till about 7 o'clock at night, a long, long day. And
while we were gone, the little psycho brigade has been very active in doing their attacks on me, and we'll get into that on Monday.
Yeah, we'll talk about that on Monday some more. But I want to talk about one thing as we close the show out, is, as we said, we rarely even listen to most internet radio anymore, Patriot Radio,
right,
because it's the same reiteration over and over.
It's
and
boring.
We hear these hosts, and they constantly chastise the audience. We got to get out there. We got to do something. We got to get out there. We got to change this. We got to change this country.
And for 5 years, they've been saying that.
Yeah, but see, if you go back 10 years to these same hosts, they've been saying the same thing. If you go back 15 years when they were simply on shortwave, they were saying the same thing. Well, I had a phone conversation with someone a couple nights ago, and they said, and this is now reality 101. This is the kind of thing that people don't like to hear, and that these hosts on these shows don't want the audience to know. But this guy said, the lower and middle classes have never changed anything in the world. Through the course of history, from the beginning of time, the lower and middle classes have never changed anything. Change always comes from the top. Now, when these radio show hosts continually chastise the audience and yell at them and say, you better start doing something before it's too late. First of all, what's the host doing? And second of all, why aren't they leading them in a more visible way? How many of them went to two protests yesterday? But
how many of them went to one?
Yeah. More importantly, What they do is, after they chastise the audience, then they dangle the false hope in front of them. We have the New World Order on the run.
Right.
They're afraid of us. We have them at the breaking point. We're at critical mass. Folks, it's not at critical mass. We don't have them on the run, and they're not afraid of these little internet radio show hosts, despite everything that they want you to believe. And when they give
I think a couple of us are starting to get under their skin.
Well, we're getting under the host show because we're exposing them for what they are. But when they dangle the false hope in front of you, we have the New World Order on the run, what this is the drug. This is the drug to keep the audience coming back for one reason, so they can make a living off of the audience.
And that's not to say that the lower and middle classes can't make change.
They just never have.
We just have yet to make a change. And it's, I guess, all about how badly you want a change and how much you're willing to give it your all
and
for truth. And if you're willing to give it your all, it's got to be more than a thimbleful. It's got to be able to be something that can be measured in a much bigger cup.
You know, when I was driving home from work today, right before the show, I was thinking, considering, and everybody that's tuned in, that knows what's going on in the world, considering what's happening before our very eyes, people should be frothing at the mouth. They should have blood exploding out of their ears rage.
Let's not see that.
They should have pitchforks and shovels and fire in their hands, that they're so outraged at what's happening. But when we were in downtown Pittsburgh yesterday, and when we were in downtown State College yesterday, and we saw thousands of people go by us, how many were outraged about anything, Lisa?
Very few. And I made a comment to Victor on the way home, and I was thinking, if we had been a couple of the people that got killed on 9/11, look at how people are today in America and the world. 9/11 is a past history thing.
Yeah.
We would be virtually forgotten.
Yeah.
Except on the one day a year when it's politically correct to remember 9/11 and to honor the dead. The official minute to honor the dead. And I was thinking, I hope that these people that died, their spirits, realize or are watching to see that there are a few of us out here who still do remember them every single day of the year and who still are trying to get the truth out about what happened, to seek justice in their name, to really honor them.
And you know,
we haven't forgotten them.
And there were a couple guys at Point State Park that when we said, hey, are you guys going to help us hold our sign when we get out on the streets? Oh, yeah, we'll be there, we'll help you. As soon as we unfurled that banner, that 14-foot banner with 9/11, we looked around, and they scattered because they thought, well, we might be photographed holding this sign, or people might see us holding this sign.
Like we've said, we don't need the crowd behind us. We've stood alone with our banner before. We stood at ground zero when no one wanted to stand with us.
Before it became a big media event.
Before it became the hip thing to do. And we stood there with the banner at ground zero, and we took some heat off that. And we've stood in front of the White House with that banner on more than one occasion. And so we didn't want to drive all the way to Pittsburgh for nothing. We went there to do something important, and we set about doing that.
Yeah. And as we said, the lack of participation and involvement was disappointing, but
the lack of passion.
Yeah, but we got on the NBC affiliate here, which now thousands and thousands, tens of thousands of people saw. They saw us giving our brief message.
Well, it wasn't the usual shtick that they're used to hearing on the mainstream media.
Yeah, they saw our signs, 9/11 lies lead to endless war in Iraq. They heard our voices talking the truth about what's really going on. So,
and guess
in the
what?
End,
and guess what? We didn't mention our website even once.
Yeah, we didn't go on and mention our website.
We didn't bring any books. We didn't bring any DVDs. We just brought ourselves and our banner.
Yeah.
That's all we brought.
When we protest, we're not there to make money, like so many others are. Like when we were in Oklahoma City, for the 10th anniversary, mm-hmm. and we heard people out in the hallway say, "Where's Alex Jones?" And the other guy says, "Well, I guess he figured he couldn't make any money off of this event."
Yeah, well, somebody said, "It's not about Alex, so why would he be here?"
Yeah, yeah. So anyway, I consider it the two events a success because we did reach thousands and thousands of people, which, if we would have stayed home and done nothing, we wouldn't have reached. And in the end, that's what we have to look at, the positive element of it. And
it was a success, and it was also a disappointment.
Yeah.
I'm more conflicted about it than Victor, obviously, because I don't think it was a raging success. But I think that with regard to us, we did what we set out to do yesterday.
Exactly.
And we're the only ones. We have only our own behavior and actions to look at and to go by. Right. We can't speak for everybody else that was there, but our observations were it was pretty much flat line on their part. And we put a pulse into it, and that's what we intended to do.
Yeah. The event was called The World Can't Wait. Well, after yesterday, it seems like the world can wait. And what's it waiting for? The worst to happen.
Well, it's waiting for people to really give a damn.
Yeah. I wish, and this is a horrible thing to say, but I wish that the government would reenact a draft. Because all those college
really?
Students we saw yesterday would immediately have a fire lit under their asses. Because right now, the way the government's operating is, in the 60s in Vietnam, they drafted the kids, and the kids were outraged and went ballistic. Now what they have is these PMCs, the private military contractors. So they're paying these mercenaries to go fight their dirty war for them, and they're keeping the kids out of it because they know if they start drafting the students, the same thing's going to happen as happened in Vietnam. So when we're out there on the streets,
I don't know that I want to see a draft happen. I don't want to see a draft happen, but I would like
I'm
to
saying
see
it for that one,
something that would light the fire under these people's butts.
Well, that's the only. But see, that's the point I'm trying to make, and I obviously don't want a draft. Obviously,
well,
I don't.
Well, it's not obvious when you don't make it very obvious because, people will twist what you say.
What I'm saying is if there was a draft, you wouldn't see these kids walking along on their cell phones without a thought or a care in the world. They would all immediately think, when's my number coming up, and when am I going to be dropped in this desert over there where there's 900 attacks occurring a month on U.S. soldiers? The whole world would change for them in a heartbeat if they had a vested interest in it.
And you want to know what? The world is changing with every heartbeat, every single day, with every heartbeat. And very few people are really seeing it for what it is or feeling it. And I hope that it doesn't take something like a draft or something like an October surprise.
Or an atomic bomb.
To really make people see what's going on. And we can only continue to plant seeds. That's really, I think, all that we can keep doing.
The war in Iraq is half a world away. It's not on television like it was with Vietnam. And
the war on freedom is right here at home.
Yeah.
In your backyard.
And guess what we did yesterday? We were free. We went out there on them streets and we showed the truth and we showed our displeasure and our disgust with what this government's doing. And in that sense, it's also a success.
Yeah, and we did it right in front of the police. And nobody hassled us. No law enforcement hassled us. Because we still do have freedoms. The question is, do you exercise your freedoms? Or do you just bitch about the possibility that they will be taken away? If you don't use them, you will lose them.
Well, that's funny because before the show when I was zipping through my emails, I saw another one of these angry emails screaming and bitching and pissing and moaning about the war in Iraq and rah, 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 I mean, just frothing at the mouth. But I'd bet Lisa $1,000 to donuts that the person that wrote this email or wrote this article, I'd bet anything they weren't out on the streets yesterday. It's real easy to send links around and send articles around.
And there's a difference between mass resistance and mass avoidance.
Yeah.
And I really hope that other World Can't Wait protest locations experience a higher turnout and a better result than we observed yesterday in two Pennsylvania locations.
And that there was more organization.
And I really hope that there are more people in Pittsburgh that are anti-war than presented themselves out at Point State Park yesterday.
We'll be back on Monday on Wing TV. We hope everybody has a good weekend. Until then, keep your eyes open because there's a lot going on.
Have a great weekend, everyone. See you on Monday.